we're going to take an interesting perspective for you today. As you look through the notes here, you'll notice there are a number of what we're calling case studies. They're not really case studies. They're basically stories, but we'll work with them as though they're case studies. And I was thinking how we should approach it. And there are a lot of other stories that I could tell in terms of people coming to Christ and different things in terms of how God has worked. And I thought about pulling some stories out of you, and we will do that. But what I finally landed on is Becky and I have always tried to live our lives kind of in some ways in two worlds. One world is the navigator world, and there's ministry that comes out of being a navigator, travel, evangelism. When I was in Canada, one of the things I always tried to do was make sure, until I just couldn't do it anymore, that I would show up on campus, in every campus in the country, and I would have them have a residence meeting. And then I would arrive a couple days early and go help them recruit students for the residence meeting, and so get in the residence. And then I knew a lot of the people who were there. Then I would share the gospel. Some people would come to Christ, and I'd stay a couple days and help follow those people up. And the fun part of a national work like that is when you do that, is you know so many people in the country that have come to the Lord. Of course, the work was small when we started, and it could do that. But that's one kind of evangelism, and it's what I call flying cover. It's or leader-oriented evangelism, or what Jim Peterson calls apostolic evangelism. It's walking in where you've got no relationships, and what you want to do is you want to create an environment. And so one of the things that leaders do is leaders create an environment where evangelism can go on. I was up in Seattle, and I was talking with a pastor up there. And one of our staff persons has a tremendous ministry going on in his church. And one of the things I observed is that this pastor is very, very apostolic. He's a leader. And what he does is he sets up these events, basketball leagues, a lot of other things, where people can bring their friends, and then he's kind of the public communicator for the group. But all of these other people are just involved in a lot of relational evangelism. But the other thing that Becky and I have tried to do over the years is just to live our lives in another way, the same way anybody else would live. Everybody goes home from work. If you have an executive position, you travel a lot, you do things. But there's this personal world where we need to live out the love of the Lord Jesus. And so we've tried to do, wherever we've gone, we've just tried to do that. We've never tried to be very complicated with it. We've never tried to have a huge personal ministry. But what we have tried to do is to touch people. And the interesting thing is we've never tried to be navigators with it. If God has done something with the navigator ministry as a result of the people coming to Christ, that was fine. But just to have a lot of fun relating to people and making friends in the neighborhood or wherever it may be. And there's been no big strategy to it. We've just kind of taken what God has given. But the fun part about it is if you came over to my house, we'll be talking about some of this later on, and you visited my neighbors right now, and you went over and talked to them and said, well, how close are you to receiving the Lord Jesus? They'd say, a long ways away. And if you didn't see what we see, you'd say, well, not much is going on there. But we've really zeroed in on them in the last 2 or 3 years to some degree. And it's just surprising to watch what God does. But we're in no hurry. We're just there. And we love them. And we're going to learn to relate to them more and more, and I think we'll probably see God do some really, really exciting things. But we're going to look at some situations where these people haven't come to the Lord at all. I'm going to look at some other situations that were just like the ones we're in right now in some ways. And God did do something, but the interesting thing is he didn't do what we expected him to do. Sometimes we thought he was working over here and found out he was really working over here. So there are some ways to learn. But if you'll look at your first page there, there are some things I'm hoping you're going to walk out of here with today, and that is, one is you're going to walk out of here motivated to love the lost. Now, that's really, really important, just to love people because they're people. That is so important, not to make a big deal out of it, not to put a lot of structure or design on it, just to love people where they are. Second thing is, I want to help you, if I can, and Becky and I can help you, to overcome some of your fears in loving the lost. Now, I don't know. Some people are not afraid of the lost at all. In fact, I've talked to people, and they say, I'm not worried about it. But most people that I talk to have some sort of a barrier. They feel a distance as a believer and one who is not a believer. Let me ask you, are there some of you here who are like me, you feel a little bit of fear? Becky does, don't you? Do you feel fear? Okay. So there's some things that we have to overcome, and sometimes what you have to do is you have to break through that one. And I recall, and you'll be seeing a story on this, where even as far back when I first broke through in ministry at Marshall University, the first thing I had to do was overcome my fears. And sometimes that involves courageous action. And I've had two or three times in my life where I've kind of gotten paralyzed in relating the lost, and I've been praying, and the Lord has just said, Alan, the problem is fear. And so then I have to do something that is fearless to get me over the hump and get me on. And God has almost invariably moved me beyond that. Then provide you with a vision for loving the lost. There are ways to love the lost. I think you're going to be so surprised when we move through this how simple it is. I was telling Scott Morton last night, you know, I presented the bridge or did a Bible study with a lot of these people, or do, but it never was the object of what we were about. The only thing we were in it to do was just love them. It was just that simple. Just start out, get to know them and love them, and then let God take you where you want to go. You'll be amazed at how simple it is just to love people. And then to equip you with some ideas, there will be some ideas that will come out, and I'm gonna recommend two books. This one is this is the Cadillac of all evangelism in terms of Jim Peterson's thinking in the community. And then this is a very, very practical book. We use this in Canada all over the country. Of setting these up, and saw a lot of people come to Christ. And in Detroit, they're still using this. Bob Jacks, I know him, and he's doing a great job. So if you want these books, they're in the bookstore. And then I have found that loving the lost works best when you link with other people, when you've got a buddy system of some kind. Jim Peterson would say you need a team. I'd say, well, yeah, you probably do. That'd probably be the best of all worlds, but I'm not sure that you can always get a team, but you can surely have a buddy system. We have a couple, Dave and Val Simons, that we started with in Canada, and they were in our church, and he was the youth pastor, and they started to fire him, and so I got him another job. And then when we moved down here, they called and said, well, can we come down and just be there? Now, we never, ever, except, you know, we'll be sitting around the house talking about the Navigators and, you know, what's going on in our lives, but they go to a little Brethren church, and they've got three kids, and their kids are like our kids, and Dave and Val are like our children, really. And what we do is we just buddy up with them, and one of the illustrations in here will be their friends. But what we've done is through a series of parties and different things, we've connected with their friends, and their friends are now making a second choice beyond Dave and Val to get to know us. And there's a little bit of movement there, and we're watching it, and there's some interest, and so that's an interesting dynamic as well. So those are some things that I have in mind that I'd like to see you come away with. But now, what would you like to come away with? As you sit here, how about you, Al?
Looking for the tools on how to reach the law.
Okay. All right, tools. All right. Does that kind of touch where everybody is? So if we can just get you a tool, you'll feel really good?
Tools.
Tools, okay. Okay, I got it. Sorry, that was a bad listening experience there. Okay, okay. Okay. Okay.
For me, when I work in a hospital, you know, there's probably 80 nurses in the nursery that I spend a fair amount of time with and have really good relationships, but there's no other believers there, so I'm on my own. So
okay.
Tools, how to...
How to connect.
Start, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I've always had heart for that, and, you know, I've been there, I've been a believer 4 years, and nothing's ever...
Okay. That's good. All right, I think we can do that.
I was just glancing at your goal. It reminded me of moving my vision from my mind to my heart.
Okay.
Having more of a bird head.
In fact, listening to you, Al, personally, as I think about it, you do need tools. There's no question about it. But I really think that that's the key, is getting your vision to your heart. Once you get that sorted out, once you make the determination that you're going to connect with the lost, once you make that decision, God will show you how to do it, almost for sure. But the key is getting it from your head to your heart in such a way that it is a resolve that you're going to do it. But then one of the other issues is to, I'm going to use a poor word here, but decomplex the issue. I think sometimes we make it so complicated that, it involves a huge meeting, it involves time and energy, it involves all kinds of relationships, years and years of Bible study and all of that kind of stuff. And as a result, it just mentally gets so overwhelming that you think, God could never use me, or what I'm doing is just not good enough. And I made a decision a long time ago that I just wasn't going to let that happen to me, that I wasn't going to allow myself to get, especially in this world that Becky and I live in over here, in terms of just our personal lives relating to people, that I just was not going to get locked into something that was so overwhelming that I couldn't move with it. So hopefully I can help you with that. Well, let's just do a little looking at some references. I'll have to move over here a little bit. I think that this is the best verse in the Bible when it comes to ministry, personal ministry with the lost. Go home to your friends and tell them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he's had compassion on you. Now, think about how hard that is. Now, this guy was a demoniac, legion. He had just been demonized to the point that a whole herd of swine had ended up in the sea as a result of his life. And they were all compressed there into one person. So he's clothed and in his right mind, and he wants to go be with Jesus. Now think about it. He is saying, I want to have a ministry. You know, if you can do this, I want to go be with you. And what does Jesus say? Go home and tell your friends what great things the Lord has done for you and that he's had compassion on you. Now, how hard is that? Jesus didn't teach him how to give the bridge illustration. Jesus didn't teach him how to have a small group Bible study. Jesus didn't teach him how to team up. Jesus didn't do any of those things. He just said, go home and tell your friends what great things the Lord has done for you and that he's had compassion on you. Now, think about the things that you could go home and tell your friends. Just think about what great things the Lord has done for you. How would you tell your friends what great things the Lord has done for you? What would you do? Got any ideas? Okay, that's a great idea. Just getting this Thanksgiving, I think Mark's in here. I believe we've listed him. Mark is a guy who drives Range Rovers all over the world. In fact, when you see these commercials, chances are good Mark may be the one that's driving one of those Range Rovers through the jungle or whatever, because there's a team of them to do that. He is a wild man in many respects. He's all over the world. He's got a nice little house. He sleeps with his girlfriend. He's not married. He's in his late 30s, early 40s. And he's a friend to my son-in-law. And when my daughter was married, Mark shows up at the wedding. And I'm out there standing looking at his Range Rover because he pulls up in this big yellow mustard Range Rover. It is beautiful. I mean, man alive, it's got this, it's got everything you can imagine on it. I mean, the thing must be worth, I don't know, $70,000-$80,000 because it's got every bell and whistle that's possible to have on a Range Rover. Of course, they let him drive it. And so we just got to talking, and I'm talking to him about his Range Rover and what do you do with it and all that stuff, and we start joking around, and finally, hey, connection. We are talking to one another, and there's real connection and rapport. Well, so I go to my daughter and I say to her, hey, you know, I really think we could do something here. And she says, well, Dad, Mark really likes you. So we set up some things, and then Nancy and Philip are home from over Thanksgiving from Chicago, so let's have Mark over to the house. And so we can sit there around Thanksgiving dinner, and Mark's sitting there, and our whole family's there, and we're talking, and just praising, you know, giving thanks. And then he gets up to leave, and he's standing there at the door, and he says to me, he says, boy, it's just great to be around a family that loves one another. And I thought, okay, another step. What great things the Lord's done for you? See, what's one great thing the Lord's done for me? My family. I mean, that's a great thing God's done for me. So I'll just share that with him. I'll share it with him. No big deal. We'll just sit around and talk. And I'm in no hurry. Mark said to me, I said, well, Mark, we ought to have lunch. He said, oh, yeah, I'd like to have lunch. He says, let's have lunch. Okay, so next step is lunch with Mark. And we'll just start moving with that. And over time, we'll build a relationship, plus my daughter and son-in-law. So in this case, it's the second choice again to connect with me. The first choice is my daughter and son-in-law. And they, in turn, are just sharing what great things the Lord has done for them as well. Go home and tell your friends what great things the Lord has done for you. Really, really, really simple. Simple things. Now, can you think of a situation where you have a non-Christian friend, where you have without being religious, without being pushy, without doing anything other than just telling them what wonderful things God has done for you that you've done. And see, just think about how many people that you're around you can tell those kinds of things to. Now, you've got to think about it. You have to intend to do it. Remember, we've got to be intentional about this thing. But there's nothing complicated about that. There is absolutely nothing complicated about it. You just go tell people what wonderful things God's done for you. Now, Steve, my next door neighbor, Steve's a businessman, and I think he's an alcoholic, and we're going to get into that in just a minute. But Steve's a nice guy, a little bit of what he would call religious background, church background, but he doesn't want anything to do with it. But now, when I go out in the summer to cut grass, more often than not, Steve will come out. And he'll come to the fence or something, and I can just about count on that Steve will come out and we'll have a conversation. Now, here's just one conversation. We're standing there talking, and Steve says, "Well, you know, Alan, I think I'd like to retire when I'm 50. He's a lot younger than I am. He's in his early 40s. And he doesn't have any children. And, they've got this beautiful house next to us. And I'm standing there, and I'm thinking, now, that doesn't make any sense at all. But now, I don't want to tell him that. But what I want to do is I want to challenge him. So I'm thinking, okay, now, what great things, I wasn't thinking this verse, but the concept, what great things has the Lord done for me? And I said to Steve, Steve, there is no way. I said, I'm 53. I said, I could imagine retiring at 50. Now, see, it's real gut level stuff. He says, well, what do you mean? I said, oh, man, I've got too many things to do. He says, he's talking about going on these long golfing vacations. And I said, give me 3 months of golf and it's over. And he's sitting there thinking about it. And I said, then give me 4 or 5 vacations. And I said, I don't think I can handle that either. And I said, I've already got more house than I need. I said, I probably need to sell it for a smaller house anyway. So I said, that's not a big deal. So I said, what would I do with the rest of my life? And then I looked at him and I said, and Steve, I've got kids. You don't even have kids. He says, yeah. And I looked at him and I said, you know, the difference, Steve, is, boy, Becky and I just really care a lot about people. And I said, we wouldn't have any fun at all unless we were around people. And then I said to him, I said, you know, Steve, I've seen so many lives changed. And boy, you can just see the wheels turning. And I just take him up right to the edge of being uncomfortable. And then back off and change the conversation. Just leave him alone. Because we're going to talk again. But I'm going to put it as... Now, the next time, by the way, we did talk, Steve says, no, I don't think I want to retire when I'm 50. We're on our way. There are good things going on there. Now, if you were standing there and you didn't have the eyes of the Holy Spirit to look at that, you would say, well, nothing's going on. But I can tell you, plenty's going on. A lot is going on there. But you're talking 3 years of just intermittent conversation kind of flowing. We went out to play golf together. And, you know, we're walking around the golf course and his ball is on the green, and you know, I just walk over and put my foot on the ball and push it into the green, and he comes on the green, he can't find his ball, and then he looks at it, and Steve says, "Boy, that's really rude." And I look at him, "Yeah, it is." But see, it, a little bit of life, fun, mix it all together, but have deep water running underneath all that all the time in that relationship. Over time, it'll work. So go to the Lord, or go home. Now, the average believer, people who are out there like you, Bill, working hard every day in the business environment and so on, God didn't ask you to go have dorm meetings. And he probably didn't gift you even to have huge meetings all over the place. But what did he say to Bill? Bill, go to your business, go to your neighborhood, and tell people, tell your friends what great things the Lord has done for you and that he's had compassion on you. And that's the wonderful thing, too, is talk about compassion. Compassion is an unbelievable open door to people and their needs. It's just a wide open nerve to walk in there and touch their lives. Well, I want to do a couple things with you here. I want to cover just some stories. And then, let's do this other thing. I've almost forgot this. Let's take these verses. Why don't you take a little bit of time just to go through those passages and see, we've already looked at this verse. Let's look at these verses right here, and let's see what God gives us. Let's take about 10 minutes. I think is it in the handout?
Yeah.
Okay, you can just take those verses and just jot down some notes, and then we'll talk about it. But Mark 4, 18 and 19. Why did we put that one in there?
Jesus said the other Matthew, the Father sent me such as I needed. So I think that the idea had that we were sent to these activities were engaged in.
Okay, that's a good observation. Any other thoughts?
God picked me up when I was lost and turned my life around, and I see the Spirit of the Lord on me, and so I think He anointed me to pass that message on. I'm an alcoholic.
Okay.
And I think that God told me that I needed to pass that
law. So you were a captive.
I was a captive.
Yeah, so, and you're set free.
And I was set free, and I see that in Luke 4, 18 and 19. He sent me to proclaim the
gospel. Okay, hey, now see, the Lord has had compassion on you. Isn't that great? Now, so, any other thoughts on that?
Well, he identifies the rest of the audience. The poor, those in captive, the blind, the oppressed.
Okay, so now what that tells us is if Jesus comes in bodily form to wherever Bill lives or wherever Dutch lives, what's he going to do? What will it look like in your city? That's going to tell us an awful lot. But now think about one other thing. Jesus came in bodily form. But Terry mentioned this morning. Where's his body now? Okay, now do you think if we're aligned with his spirit and united to him, do you think the Lord Jesus working through us, that his ministry through us will look any different than it looked when he was on this earth? Especially when he says, hey, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me and has anointed me this day. Well, see, now that tells us all kinds of things about how evangelism. I don't like the word evangelism. It's all through the Bible. And I like the idea of proclaim. And I love that idea as a navigator because I really, personally, there's nothing I love more than getting in a big meeting. Well, you know, I can remember the days of Vietnam War, people standing in the back on campuses burning our comment cards like draft cards. I mean, that's fun. But, Jesus did a lot of that. But that's a style of leadership. But when you think about how the ministry actually looks through the body in terms of touching people, you're identifying an audience there and how he touches them and how he relates to them. And most of the people we're going to go to are pretty broken. Brokenhearted, captives, needing freedom, all of those things. And so we need to look at people not from the angle of saying, boy, I got to get them I got to get them out of darkness into light. Now, we do need to do that. But we need a long view of that thing in terms of the whole transformational process. So when I look at Dick and Priscilla, Steve and Debbie, Dean and Ellen, and the people, I'm looking at a whole process, and I'm asking a question. Now, how does Jesus come to them? I am Jesus in the sense that I am standing there, and I'm his body. And so he needs to flow through me. And so, Linda, where you're at, that's a starting point. That's where you start, is you start, hey, he's working through me, and I'm it. So I'm the only body of Jesus they're going to see for some time. So I better get on with doing what he does and do it the way he does it. And that means that I've got to go to the brokenhearted. It means that I've got to look at those who are captives. Most of the people I run into, Bill, whether they are wealthy or whether they're poor, everywhere I look today, I find people who are captives in just about every direction I look. So I think, well, that's what Jesus went to, so that helps a whole lot. All right, now, what's Romans 1:16 tell us, though? Who wants to elaborate on that a little bit? Okay. Okay, now what is it that makes us ashamed? Yeah.
Today's society is improper to speak about Christ.
Yeah.
You can speak about anything else.
Yeah. Pluralistic society, but don't talk about Jesus.
He is personally rejected.
Yeah. Okay, so I got a little quote for you that some of you probably heard. Lauren Sanney said this: we don't do evangelism because we hate to hurt others. The reason we don't do evangelism is because it hurts us. And see, that one. Now, what are we really talking about here? We're talking about a big fear factor. Really big fear factor. And one of the things I've learned is every time I fear, every time I realize I'm drifting into fear, one of the first things I do is I go do something that scares the wits out of me in terms of doing something so that I get myself out of that mode and choosing to believe God. And you'll see that. I noticed that I just wasn't looking for opportunities to share Christ a little while back. And so I thought, well, okay, on this trip, what I'm going to do is I'm going to make sure every time somebody sits down beside me, at least I attempt to, on an airplane or whatever, I attempt to move the gospel. And because I've got to get over this thing of being ashamed of the gospel. I'm just not doing it right. And so I'm flying into Washington, D.C. Some of you guys are right there. And this guy is sitting beside me, and he doesn't want to talk to me. And not only that, but they had bumped me up to business class. So you can tell that this guy, he's got all the bells and whistles all out, everything. And so finally, we get into a discussion that he's interested in is his children. And we got an open nerve, and I started to share with him what God had done in my family and how God had transformed. Well, he says, I've got some estranged children. And he says, I'm in trouble. And he says, tell you the truth, he says, my kids need to get back to church. And he says, I do too. Before long, we're really into it. And we're beginning to talk about some really, really heavy things. And I shared the gospel with him, and we exchanged cards. You know what I found out later? This guy was one of the top lobbyists in Washington, and that he was in meeting with Newt Gingrich all the time. And he starts mailing me all this material, and we start striking up some kind of connection. I am followed through on it in some ways because there's no way I could sustain it. But I thought, now, isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? What if I hadn't said anything? What if I just let that one go by? But the gospel got in. And one of the things I've learned is that it's life and message. You've got to put them together. And you have to know how to share the gospel. Now, that's just fundamental. And, of course, we don't have time to do all that here. But there has to be a way of communicating the gospel so that when you get to that point, you are confident that you know how to do it. Now, you can use the four laws. You can use four steps to peace with God. You can use the bridge illustration. You use a more elaborate approach. But there's at some point people need to hear a crystal clear explanation, and you've got to be ready to give an answer of the reason of the hope that's in you. In fact, we've got that verse down there, don't we? Isn't that one? Yeah. Okay, what stands out in 2 Corinthians 5, 17 to 21? Yeah, I think that's the core, Barbara. I think it's a whole ministry of reconciliation, and it begins with the lost. One of the nice things in the Old Testament, you learn, especially in Isaiah 42, ministry, God's ministry always begins in the darkness and ends in the light. But God goes to the darkness. And the ministry of reconciliation is coming into the darkness and aligning things with the King of Kings and Lord of Lords and the Good Shepherd. And so we have that ministry. So we don't have any choice in the sense if we're obedient, we have to do this. And I think that's another thing is that in this discussion of giftedness in the body, I mean, I am not, believe me, and people will say this to kind of cover for themselves, I'm not an evangelist. That's why one of the reasons I really try, it's easy for me to love people. It is not easy for me. I like the public stuff, but I don't like the personal evangelism. It's hard for me. Every time I go from here to here in evangelism, from where I am to the lost, my hands get sweaty, I get nervous. I've never gotten over that. And I think that's the gifted people don't get nervous. But people who don't have the gift of evangelism and have to do it out of obedience, they're the ones who get really, really, really nervous. But do these verses let us off the hook? Bill, you want to say something?
I just found, for me, when I begin to realize who's really doing the work, it takes that fear away.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point. And sometimes I don't do that. Believe me, sometimes I get caught up in, ooh, I've got to do this. And it does wear on me in that sense, but that's a good one. Now, do you think you're an evangelist?
No, but she just said I've been given the ministry of reconciliation.
Okay.
Jesus isn't here, so
I'm glad you had to tell me. Okay. That's great. That's good. Okay, Carol?
One of the things I'm just thinking, and you mentioned it too, that pulls me back is sustaining the relationship.
Yeah.
You know, I could just have so many relationships, and my capacity, I'm finding, as I've gotten older, has changed.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that helped me back. I'm not sure exactly what to do with that, but
I'll tell you what I've done. Now, every day, and I'm not saying this is right at all, but every day I have a group of people I pray for. And personally, I get so tired of thinking about all the things that could happen, ought to happen. And so it gets so overwhelming that, well, it's Steve and Debbie, it's Dick and Priscilla, and it's Dean and Ellen, and it's Mark. And then I just take what comes beyond that. But those are the people that I'm really focused on. And interestingly enough, if you looked at my life every day, you wouldn't even think I was focused on them in some respects. But I'm focused in my heart. I know what's going on, and I know what I'm after, but I'm not in a big hurry. I think that's another thing that happens to us is we get under the strain and urgency of having to make it happen. And I think you're going to see, as we move through these case studies, I think you're going to see some really interesting things. Even when Becky and I were looking over some of them, going through, and we were looking at it saying, wow, isn't that interesting? Isn't that amazing how God did that? And we never dreamed that was what he was doing. Never dreamed in a lifetime that that's what he was doing. Well, we got one other verse here, and that's proclaim his excellencies. And that's what that really is, just talk about Jesus. Talk about what he's like, the good parts of what he's done for us in us. And God just wants us to talk about that. But now, that's not hard to do. That's really not that difficult. The gospel, I find, the gospel itself, the message is hard. And I have to choose to get over the hump. And the other thing is, I have to choose to connect with the lost. That's a hard one. And to actually, now, Carol, you guys have got this couple. Why don't you share what you guys did in your neighborhood with this couple? I think they've come to the Lord. Terry was...
Oh, just befriending?
Yeah, yeah.
We've done all kinds of things with them. But we just, she and I would walk together early in the morning. And Terry would spend time with him. He has done a lot of things with him. They have some common interests. And coming over, just sit around talking.
Now, do you find it hard?
No.
No.
No, see, that's the kind of thing I really enjoy is what I call friendship evangelism. Just doing things. Meeting the person where they are.
Yeah.
Doing with them what they like to do. He's a hunter, and Terry hasn't hunted and hasn't fished, and that guy loves both. And so doing those things with him has been really helpful.
Yeah, see, I don't want to go with Mark in that Range Rover, but that's what he wants me to do. He wants to take me way up on on the mountains, and they've got a trail that comes down. And I told him, I said, Mark, surely we can figure out a way to relate better than that. Yeah, thanks. But see, I was listening to Terry share some things about how he related to that neighbor, and I thought, yeah, that's just the way. That's the same stuff. And I'll bet, how long a time span was involved in that?
I think it's been a couple of years.
Okay. See, with us, it's been with a couple of these people, it's been longer than that. Now, we had some struggles with our daughter, which kind of paralyzed us for a while, and so that delayed our getting into our neighborhood with some of it. But and we had to work our way over some humps as well in terms of their understanding of us. So, but now it's a lot more fun. June, you've got some situations. Lauren was telling me about. Just tell me about the neighbor who met him out in the middle of the street, who was praying with him and crying. Do you know that story?
Not sure
what. Go tell your friends what great things the Lord has done for you. Promises. God promises. He's a promiser. He keeps his promises. See, that's a great thing that the Lord has done for us. And he's compassionate.
I found probably the hardest place to share the gospel is with your own family.
Amen.
Or even those that you work with the closest. Jesus said, the prophet doesn't know why he's going hometown. And I've seen that very definitely with my own family. So about two and a half years ago, we were praying how we might reach out and pull some of our children, and four of them happened to live nearby. So I decided to have them in for a dinner, and I'd looked around at what's going on in the world and also in their lives and situations and kind of prepare a little sharing with them about what's going on in the world and how it might pertain to them. What was interesting that we ended up about a three-hour discussion around the table that it was very connected, very dynamic. And the thing that began to open the door, particularly with my youngest daughter, to turn to Jane, her stepmom. And more and more, as she would encounter a problem, either in the rearing of her small daughters or with her husband, would call her. And so we continued to just do this. And then, I don't know, that work did us in. We knew things were happening. We could see a little here and a little there. And I guess I'll shorten it by saying that just a few months ago, I looked around the church, and there are three of my children with their family. The one son-in-law
actively practicing touching. Right now, as they're encountering people with problems, men in these forests, he'll call. Well, how do we do this? Did we do right in sharing this with him? My son, who had really been straight, I mean, he had always gone off the deep end, and they never quit praying for him. And he said just at Christmas when we had him together for dinner, he said, "Dad, thanks for persevering with me." Look around and see three of the four and their families, all of them growing in faith now, and they're sitting in church with all the grandchildren, and my wife's youngest brother and her family, along with a couple other families and a couple single guys that we had impacted. Kind of hard to not see the mighty work of God working, but you don't see it for a period of time. It's a gradual process.
Now, see, that's the thing, because, see, the enemy will come in and tell you nothing's going on. And now we do want to move to some things that are more proactive than what we're talking about right now. But I see the one thing we've got to do is value the little things. And we have to learn to enjoy the little steps with people, because the problem is, to see, we get deceived into thinking to truly relate to the law, we've got to do this huge thing. And sometimes that paralyzes us from just doing the little things that have unbelievable impact. Now, I'm going to give you a break here. Let me just take you through a couple things here really quickly, because I'm going to have you do something when we come back. Turn to these case studies. Now, I just want to quickly run you through these stories, and then I'm going to break you up in groups and see what suggestions you would have on some of these things. Now, all of these are real stories. Nothing is made up. These are things that have either happened somewhere in our past or things that are going on right now. And like I say, what we've tried to do in our lives is just stay at it. Don't do anything big and dramatic. Just stay at it. Always at it. Okay, Ken and Mike. Now, this was the breakthrough for me. God spoke to me because I was running around as a young kid doing a lot of evangelism, but the way I do it is I go run over to the campus, do evangelism without much intent of leading a person to Christ or just to get a decision, kind of a notch on my gun, run back and tell the story. So there was a lot of lack of integrity in what I was doing. Didn't really realize there was a lack of integrity, but there was. And God spoke to me one day. Dutch, it was after Brad had come back to visit me. And God spoke to me from Hebrews 6, 11 and 14. He said, "And be not slothful, but be followers of those who through faith and patience inherit the promises." So link up with those. And in this case, it was Brad and all the Lord Jesus and all that goes behind him. Link up with that and trust me. And be a link in a chain and be faithful. Don't be slothful. And God said, "I will surely bless you and I will surely multiply you." And I read that verse and I said, "Yes, I'm going to do that." So what's the next decision? Well, you got to start at square one. So I called a friend and I said, "Well, I've got to go out and really share Christ." And he said, "Well, I can't go with you." He's a good guy and would have done it, but he couldn't do it that time. So I went to this hotel where students were living, and it was U-shaped like this. I walked to this end of the hall, just started knocking on doors, and I didn't know how to do evangelism. Didn't have a clue to how to do really effective evangelism. Knew how to give the bridge, though. And so, would you like to talk about Jesus Christ? No, no, no. All the way down that hall, all the way down the back, all the way down the other hall. So boom, boom, boom. And I got to the last door and I almost didn't knock on the door. Finally, I decided, okay, might as well. Last door. Knocked on the door. And the guy said, "Sure, come on in." And he was Jewish. And we argued for over an hour. But in the discussion, his roommate walked in, was over lying on the bed, just kind of groaning more than anything else. I thought he was crazy. I really did. But when I got up to leave, he got up, walked over, and he said, "I've been listening to you talk to my roommate." would you come back and share that with me? I was on a Friday night. On Sunday night, I went back and led Mike to the Lord. 2 weeks later, I led his friend next door to the Lord, Ken. And I went back, that was in 1966, went back in 1978 to a conference. And the MC asked those two guys to stand up, and then he said, now, if there's anyone here who has been directly touched through the lives of these men, would you just stand up in terms of ministry? And about a third of the conference, about 300 people there, and about a third of the conference stood up. Now, that taught me, now think of it, be not slothful, but be followers of those who through faith and patience inherit the promises, rooted in obedience. And God says, you obey me, I will surely bless you, and I will surely multiply you. Two nights later, you take a step of faith, you do it all wrong, bang on doors, don't know how to do it, walk in, get in an argument, but God's at work. And Ken, or Mike, hears, Ken hears, we work with those two guys, and it results in probably a minimum of 100 people. Now, that one experience changed my whole life. That changed everything I've ever done because, you see, what had to happen there is there were all kinds of barriers. I was afraid. So the key was fear over faith, or faith over fear. Even if you do it wrong, to get on out there and get into it. And the thing that you mentioned, Bill, trust God. Don't look at my process. Just get on with it and get into it, even if you don't know how to do it. And Linda, that's one of the big keys, is just launch into it. God will teach you with your own failures. He'll teach you all kinds of things, but you have to be willing to fail, and you have to be anchored to Him and His promises and what He's already doing. So now, I want you to think about that experience. That's one. Now, let's go to the next one. The next one is Georgina and her boy. Oh, wait a minute. I missed one. Oh, I see. It's on the back. Okay. Now, this one's a really interesting one. We're living in a neighborhood. Cindy was living with us at the time. A nice neighborhood. But next door, we've got this family that's in all kinds of trouble. Now, Becky is the one who's having the ministry in the neighborhood. Tell them a little bit about Sophie, what you were doing there with her.
This is Sophie, like across the street. It's a different family. She's from Eastern Europe, lived in Chicago a short time, didn't have any friends, so we just developed a friendship and just getting to know each other. Then we had one kid each that had, it was the same age. And so it was just a matter of reaching out to her, being her friend. And her husband was a businessman, very busy, very seldom home.
And extremely wealthy, two lives.
Just a matter of just becoming her friend, being there for her when she needed someone.
So that's what Becky was doing, relating. Now, the neighbors were kind of watching this. Cindy was living with us at the time, and Ann was living with us at the time, weren't they? And while Becky's over here relating to Sophie, these people over here, the kids are on drugs. You can hear stuff going on, parties, all kinds of stuff going on in the family, and you think, boy, those people are nuts. But the interesting thing is their little girl, Maureen, starts coming over to the house. And so, at first we were a little nervous. Hey, our two daughters, what's going on over there? We have no idea. What are we going to do? And we made a decision. We're going to love that little girl. That may be the only Jesus they'll ever see. And so we're going to love her, and we're going to let her come and be in our home. Well, we did that. And the noise went on. Problems went on. You told me yesterday you got Maureen in a little Bible study.
Yeah, we started doing the beginning with Christ, and I wasn't even sure if she was a Christian. I think she made a commitment but hadn't really grown much, and it was her brother who was into drugs, and you know, the rest of the family was really messed up. But anyway, then you got a letter from her later, and I I reread the Christmas letter I got from her last night, and she's, you know, sounds like she's growing. She's
You're talking about Mary Kay.
About Mary Kay.
Yeah. Yes. Okay, now what happens here? This is a really interesting story. Now, we did get to know the mother, and the same thing. It was just they knew who we were. We got to share who we, what we were doing, a number of things, but they were really distant. But Maureen was in close. Cindy's connecting with a little Bible study. Now, I get a letter when I'm in Canada from the older sister, Mary Kay. I've come to know the Lord Jesus. And just want to tell you that what made that happen was I was watching you love my sister, Maureen. And we saw how much you loved them, and we saw your family. And I've received Christ and just want you to know that it's because we were watching it. Now, you never would have known that. In a thousand years, you would have never known. That was what was going on. But we just had connections all over the neighborhood. And if you could have picked out one place where God was at work in the neighborhood, you said Sophie for sure. And we've been back to see Sophie. And she hasn't come to the Lord. I think her husband's involved in some really, really interesting stuff, but I don't know. And maybe Sophie will come to the Lord someday. We'll probably go back and maybe connect with her again. But here, this gal is walking with the Lord and probably, you know, in some kind of connection with Maureen. Now, think about it. See, no big bridge illustration, a little bit of Bible study, but a whole lot of love. And many times Maureen was in the house and Becky said to me, that kid, Aunt Augusta, because she was really a little troublemaker with the... Now, here's what happens, though, in this story. I come home from a trip. I'm traveling all over Canada, and Becky says to me, she tells me this story. And I say to her, now this gal lives in low-income housing. She is a very bright woman. You can tell she's got all kinds of intelligence, but you can tell also she's made a huge number of mistakes. And these little boys are mixed race, you can tell that she's been involved in all kinds of relationships in the sense of what she describes is just a kind of a wandering lifestyle until the boys come into the world. The husband's not around. And I said, Becky, if we commit to that lady, she'll use us. And so then a little bit later, she calls us up and says, I have to go into the hospital for tests. Would you keep the boys? I'm saying, I don't know. I think we're going down the road. Here it goes. But Becky wanted to do it. So, okay, we'll take the boys. So we got two little boys. Then we get the phone call. Sure enough, she's diagnosed with terminal cancer. Well, a little bit further down the road, she decides we would be the best people in the world to take care of those little boys. So now we're the guardians, two little boys in our house. And so it gets deeper and deeper. Well, I shared the gospel with her, and she prayed. And we're not sure whether she really received the Lord or what was going on there. But we worked that one through. But we had two little boys, not for a few weeks, but for some time while their mother was dying. And so we went all the way through that, and then through a whole series of complications, we finally were able to get those two little boys in a home with a very godly man, a pastor and his wife, who had in turn adopted a number of children from around the world. And those kids were going right into a perfect home for them. And those kids could have never in a thousand years ever dreamed that they would ever have a home like that. So they were headed for certain destruction on the one hand, and a life of violence and all that you can imagine. But can you imagine the cost? I mean, time, energy, the painfulness. But God did a miracle. And we look at that, and we think that our whole family looks at it. Our children got to watch that and watch us work our way through it. And while they hated it while it was going on, now they look back on it. And you know, one of the things we ask our children is, I watch all three of my girls, and they all just naturally know how to relate to people and relate to the lost. And I thought, well, nobody ever showed them. And I asked one of them one day, I said, well, how in the world do you know how to do that? And they said, well, Dad, we just watched you. And so that one was not fun, but it was fun. Now, then there's Chris and Bahi. This is real interesting. Chris has a degree from the University of London, elite school. He's from Sri Lanka. He's an accountant. But what happened was I was in one of those periods where I wasn't sharing Christ regularly. And so I thought much like, you know, the stories you hear about Dawson Trotman, well, I better go out and just share Christ. So I went out, went to this donut shop, walked in. Chris was sitting there. And I shared Christ with him, left, went home. That was the end of it. And then a few weeks later, Becky and I had to drive 35 minutes downtown to the U.S. consulate to deal with our passports and things in Toronto. And I said to Becky, I said, well, I'll just take the car around here. And I went out there and took the car around to this other place. Lo and behold, guess who I see? Chris. Well, he was really struggling with his life. And we got to know one another. And so finally I said to him, I made a terrible mistake here, by the way, and I want you to analyze this. I said to him, well, we have an extra room. You can come stay with us for a few days until you can sort things out. And here's a guy who is brilliant, but has completely lost it. And so then he comes into our home. Should have never done that, but I did. And then I found out that he was drinking, and so I said to him, hey, you've got to leave. But we maintained a relationship. Well, then Chris prayed to receive Christ. Again, I'm not sure he really did receive the Lord. But he got involved with a gal, a Hindu gal, from Sri Lanka, who was also a chartered accountant, brilliant girl, beautiful girl. And she's Hindu, so they have a Hindu wedding. We debate, well, what are we going to do? We go to the wedding, continue to relate to them. And a little while later, Bahi shows up at our house with a bruise on her face. She had had a child, and Chris was drinking, and he had started beating her. Well, then we had to take him to court, got the little boy, Rajiv, and Bahi together. She hadn't come to the Lord at this time, but she wonderfully trusted the Lord. And today, that gal is radiant with her little boy in terms of having come to the Lord. Now, the interesting thing is, God, I don't think, was connecting with Chris at all in that whole time. But he used sovereign circumstances to get to Bahi. And now, Bahi is loving God. We get the most wonderful letters from her. And you see that, and you think, wow, look at what God was doing all the time. And we never dreamed that was what he was doing. But we did need to know how to share the gospel. We needed to know how to get her into the Bible. Some of those things. But mostly it was a group effort. And just nurturing her along and loving her like crazy. Just every way we could think of. Love her to death. And tried to love Chris the same way. He rejected it. But she responded. Now think, here's Maureen, a troubled family, but it's the older sister that God is trying to connect with. Here, it's not Chris, it's Bahi. Isn't that amazing? Okay, now, told you a little bit about Steve and Debbie. This is Dick and Priscilla. They're next door. Now, what we've done here, I played golf with him. He hasn't come to the Lord. I've talked to him about the Lord. I've talked to both Steve and Dick about the Lord, just enough to see where they are. Both of them don't want anything to do with religion. And they know that I work for a Christian organization. I've overcome that with them so that at this point we're friends. And we can talk. And the little boy, Greg, he's out playing ball in his front yard. And I was involved in athletics, so I taught Greg how to do some things, and I've gone to his Little League game. And it's a family affair with them, and you can see them sitting there saying, "Now, boy, how does he care about Greg?" And so, we have to work through the relationships there. But we don't think we're making any headway at all, except just friendships. They're in and out of our house. Today, they're taking care of the dog, and their kids are in and out in the family. And we're good friends. Not deep, deep friends, just good friends. But one day, Priscilla has a lump on her breast, and a doctor tells her she's got to come in for a biopsy. Priscilla's over to see Becky. "Would you pray for me?" She's Roman Catholic. Fairly serious. Dick doesn't want anything to do with it. Now, what do we do from there? So we got Steve, we got Dick and Priscilla, both friends, but not making great headway. I've told you about Mark. Now, Dean and Ellen, I've told you about Steve and Debbie. Now, and Mark, Dean and Ellen, Dave and Val Simons are like our children. They're in their 30s, just a little bit older than my children. And so what we're doing there is we're working off of their relationships. But I've noticed that, like Dean, the last time I was at a deal with Dave and Val, Dean and I were talking, and we figured out that, hey, we work fairly close by. So we said, well, why don't we have lunch together? We noticed this year we got a Christmas card from him. Val lost a little baby in its fifth month, and so Ellen was at the funeral. And so I went over and I was talking with Ellen, and I was just telling her, well, you know, Ellen, you've been a good friend to Dave and Val. Well, Ellen had her hand out like this, and then she held her hand out. I had spoken at the funeral, and then she went just like this. And then she looked at me in tears just rolling down her cheeks. And then later on, you know, she said to Val, she said, you know, when I was with Ellen, made me cry. Well, now what's that tell me? We're not close friends. We're just connecting. We're a second choice for them with Dean and Ellen. It's Dave and Val that are connected with them. But see, people will look at a person and like about maybe 65% of you. There's about 35% they won't like. So what you want them to do is you want them to make a next choice and see whether that second person compensates for the first person. Then you've got community. Well, see, little things like that, I get on the phone and I call Val and I say, all right, now Val, I think we've got a connection here with the kids and we've got a connection with Dean and Ellen. So the next thing what we need to do is we need to do something together over at our house. So you invite Dean and Ellen over to our house. Now, Ellen's mother is a staunch Roman Catholic and doesn't want her studying the Bible, but the father, we think, knows the Lord. So there's a whole network there. And so we're just watching that one. Now, that's where we are right now. We've been working on these relationships now anywhere, 2 to 3 years? And some of them are deep, some of them are not so deep. Just kind of watching it and praying for them. Okay, let's take about a 10-minute break, and then what we're going to do is we're going to break up in little groups and let you talk about these situations and see how you would look at them and do it differently. Now, the big thing, the really, really important thing that I want you to get, because I really, really believe this, is, in fact, I was just talking with Debbie in the hall about this, is the little things count. And if I couldn't go back through my life and look at little things and see what God did, I would never, ever believe that. I'm going to tell you one other little story, and then we'll break into these little groups. My brother ministers on the West Coast, This is something I know nothing about, absolutely nothing about. I still don't know the details on it. It's all he told me. Was one night he was listening to the radio. I think he was driving. I may have that wrong. But he was listening to two guys being interviewed. And the two guys were telling the story about how God was working in their lives. I think it was in Alaska or someplace. And they were telling their story, and my brother called me. These two guys were at Marshall University, and apparently they said, I led them to the Lord. I don't even remember it. I don't know who they are. And my brother said, well, do you know who these guys are? I said, I don't have a clue. But here God's using them. And see, those are the kinds of things you just never know what God is doing. And so you always have to, you have to learn to value the little things, the little moments with people. And I really believe if we could just get the Christian community to value their little moments, and if we could just uncomplicate the whole thing, put the emphasis on love and the skill in sharing the gospel, we do need to know how to lead a Bible study. We do need to know how to lead people to Christ. We need to know how to do those things. But I really think that if the Christian community would just start moving out into the world they live in to love, to care, and to tell them what great things the Lord has done for them, I think we'd see fruit all over the place. But I think it'd be long-term fruit. Wouldn't be fruit that would necessarily come overnight or and I think we do need proclamation evangelism, but I think that basically, as I say, is a leader job to fly cover for God's people, to create an environment. And there are certain people who are called to that. Their job is to provide it. Have you ever seen someone come walking into an area and they just love to share Christ in a big way, and all of a sudden the whole place is just a buzz with their presence? That's a gift. See, they're good at it. And so they need to do that. And one of the things I tell navigator leaders, especially in collegiate work and some of these other things, is, hey, go fly cover for your people. So that little ones can become a thousand and a small and a mighty nation. Okay, now let's take these four, these that have not come to the Lord here. We're going to talk about Dick and Priscilla, Steve and Debbie, Mark, and Dean and Ellen. I want you to look those over, and I want you to think about it for a few minutes, and then I want you to come up with ideas as to what we might do. What are some ideas as to working out a little more effective love and maybe clarity of the gospel? And let's see, why don't we break into groups for a few minutes? Let's break this group in over here. And what you guys do is this group over here, you take Dick and Priscilla and Steve and Debbie. And then this group over here, you take Mark and you take Dean and Ellen. And see what ideas you would come up with to make it work. And let's see, Bill, why don't you lead this group over here? And Dutch, why don't you lead this group over here? Just pull your chairs around and
you give us a little bit of feedback on what your group said.
I guess number one.
Which one are you doing, Dutch?
Five and six. Seems like I keep on doing a lot of things have been doing. But in addition to that, thought that perhaps at lunch I might be able to go a little bit deeper with Dick at the right opportunity. And maybe to think in terms of inviting him to some other events of non-threatening nature, which would be a touch one step farther. And perhaps Becky to really continue to pursue Priscilla. Other than that, we didn't come up with anything
concrete. I think it might be a little different if we knew them better.
Yeah.
Some of the personalities, habits, and et cetera.
Well, one of the things I, just as an idea of what you're talking about that we came up with, we didn't get to do it because of so many other functions this Christmas, and we're really sorry it happened that way, but they have a beautiful Christmas presentation at the Broadmoor downtown, and so we thought, well, that's the next step, is something that is neutral, that we know they would enjoy, something we would enjoy, but we would pay. So that was that's one of the things that we're thinking about doing next, is picking out something like that to do together. Now, we'll keep on playing golf, stuff like that. But any other thoughts? Now, see, God is at work. That's the key, is that, and again, we want to emphasize, God values the little things. And I was telling Debbie again, the biggest hindrance to people being fruitful is they don't do the little things because they feel like they ought to be doing the big things all the time. And the enemy comes in and makes it such a burden for us that we miss the obvious. Okay, let's go over here. I thought you were covering both of them. I'm sorry. Okay, let's go with Steve and Debbie then.
Okay. With Steve and Debbie, we definitely thought that having both for a meal might be the next step.
That'd be a great idea.
With Steve, with his problem with alcohol, with the gardeners on the part of Debbie, we don't quite know, you know, what's going on. With an alcoholic, there's endemics in all.
Yeah.
Could be getting worse.
Yeah.
She could be fearful of things that are happening. There might be abuse or many things going on. And that's kind of hard if you know what to do other than just continue to befriend her. But having him over for a meal can do wonders.
Yeah.
Relax him and just love him.
Yeah.
Continue to pray for him and love him. And
now, see, listen to that. See how much we already know? Isn't it interesting? We know a lot about how... See, we're looking for tools, Al, but we already know. We already know how to have barbecue. We already know how to have dinner. We already know how to take them downtown and sit in the car and wait on them. We already know so much. The stuff we don't know in terms of sometimes the presentation of the gospel or the Bible study, sometimes that's so far down the road, we got plenty of time to learn it on our way there. So, but notice in most of these stories, or like you look at Steve and Debbie, you look at them and you say, well, they're not ready for a Bible study. I mean, they're not even close to being ready for a Bible study. Mark isn't. But I do need to be ready when the time comes to be able to handle a good Bible study discussion. And by the way, that's we've got some Bible studies that I can help you with that we're working on in the city roundtable meetings or R&D meetings that we're having, where we've got some great Bible study discussions that you can use questions for John and Romans, so we can plug those in. Okay, anything else? Okay, let's go over here, Bill.
Well, first of all, you're going to have to hurry because we've made arrangements for you to meet Mark at 12:30.
Okay.
He'll be at the entrance.
Yeah.
And he wants to show you how you can do it.
Mark, have a ball, buddy. Meet you at the bottom of the hill.
Well, I guess the group felt, Adam, that Mark sees in you and Becky and through your kids, sees in you all perhaps some of the family that he doesn't have.
Yeah, we think so.
And so probably the more you find out about that act in that capacity is going to be beneficial. You told us that while he sleeps with the gal, he doesn't really live with her.
Oh, it's off and on.
Yeah, but we think that you can afford to be somewhat bold in your approach to him. At the same time, do not exclude her.
Yeah.
Because she might come to Christ as readily as he might come to Christ. And we were given the a female viewpoint on that, that you know, she may be more worthwhile than
yeah.
he is.
Yeah. Hey.
But since the young couple has moved to Chicago, as you might include Mark in something in your house, you might find somebody in his peer group that has an equal interest in athletics, maybe not car driving, but that has Christian values, that you could start linking him into some people his own age. And then the question was raised, since his work takes him around the country, have you got some contacts in any of the places where he comes to light? If he's there for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. Or
see, I hadn't even thought of that. That didn't cross my mind.
Could you link him up to a guy?
Sure.
You know, someplace yeah. else through NAV connections yeah. or whatever. But I think that's a fairly definitive look at Mark.
Yeah.
And the truth is, on the other couple, we really didn't get started.
Okay.
It would be nice if Mark could meet somebody his own age who yeah. has decided not to sleep around.
Yeah.
You know, like, why in the world would you decide that? I mean,
well, see, that's
something in common with before they realized.
And see, that's one of the things. See, he's looking at Nancy and Philip, and he's seen the transformation in their lives. Where Nancy and Philip weren't walking with the Lord, and then boom, it all turned around, and now they are. And he's looking at that, and he's saying, "Wow, what a transformation!" So that one's a big one. Well, boy, just think about all that you know. Just think about all that you already know. And that's one of my objectives, was to lift that up and get that up where you can see it. Now I got another one for you. Think of a friend of yours, some non-Christian friend that you have, or a few. Now, what could you do with them? And what's the biggest hindering factor? And what somebody said time? Yeah. See, that's the biggest thing. We're so involved in other things and Christian things. And I am too. By the way, I hate to admit, like Dick and Priscilla, boy, if we had gotten them to that Broadmoor presentation, we'd have been so far down the line. But we ended up doing Christian things all through the holidays, and we're so busy with our tongues hanging out and our own family that we never got a chance to do that. But which is more valuable? I don't want to say the other is not more valuable or whatever, but boy, at least they're on par. Jolene, you haven't said anything. You have anything you want to, any thoughts?
No.
Okay. But you don't want me to pick on you. Just okay, good. All right, let's flip the page then over here and just do a few things that will... My notes are so messed up here, I can't even find where I am. Let's see the section on suggestions, issues, principles. Here it is. Okay. All right. Think about the principles. Now, this is very, very important, because now we're getting into, Al, again, things that you may not be expecting, but at the same time, they are how-tos. And one thing is prayer. Now, one thing God has taught me is, like Dick and Priscilla and Steve and Debbie, on the way to work each day, pray for them. Make sure I pray for them. Because I've learned that I never know what God is doing and when He's doing it. So it's God's effort, and so I pray for them. Don't pray as often for Mark. Do pray for Dean and Ellen quite often. And see, nobody would ever know, with the way if people were like Becky or even the children in my own home, they wouldn't know that every day those people are being prayed for, unless I just mention it once in a while. But it's a high priority item. Of praying for them. And I found with these other situations, prayer was at the foundation of every one of them. Every one of them. It was some kind of initiative, but there was something that was unseen that other people could not see, but you can see it through the eyes of God, and so you begin to pray for it, and things begin to happen. That's one. Then I think the second thing is turning faith, turning fear into faith and love. See, with Georgina, I knew we were going to get used. It wasn't a question. Will we? Is it a possibility? I knew from day one it was going to happen. I just knew the situation. I could smell it a mile away, intuitively, that we were headed into it. And there are some other things we could have done that could have protected that. Same with Kristen Bahi. There are some things that we could have done to protect the family. And I think we got hurt as a family as well. And I don't think I'd ever open my home like that. I would. What I'd do is I'd come up with some money to help another way and continue to relate. But I wouldn't do it that way. But the other thing you do have to do is you've got to turn your fear into faith and love. And that means it's going to be costly. You're stepping out, and as soon as you step out into the, Debbie, the situations you're talking about, all of us have these relationships. You step into it, and it looks crazy. It just looks crazy. Why are you doing that? Like Dutch, see, for you to sit down with your kids, you know, here's the cynic. There goes Dad again. Dad's always, he's always on a drum, pounding the drum, trying to tell us. He just can't leave us alone. But it's having an impact. See, here's my dad, sending out a letter, 84 toward 85, sends out a Christmas letter to tell the story about how he came to the Lord. And my dad just has a passion for doing that. Now, my brother, who's not a believer, oh, there goes Dad again, you know. But, you know, then God led my dad to my mother's Bible. And my mother had written a letter to my brother, who's not a believer. And my dad pulled that out and sent that to him. Now that had an impact. My mother's not alive. But my mother had said in the letter, she'd said, Bernard, when I die, I'm going to go and I'm going to be with the Lord. But when you die, if you're not with me, God's going to have to wipe away a lot of tears from my eyes. Now, boy, you talk about power. But see, if Dad had not written the letter, he wouldn't have gone to his Bible. Now, I've seen my dad do things in evangelism. He's not an evangelist either, but in my neighborhood, see, he taught me some things about evangelism. He was called the apron man. And he took this little blue apron, put tracks in, walked all the way around. He's got an eighth grade education. And my dad's on, he's no fool. He's a brilliant man. But my dad was, he did things that I watched him do that were courageous. And he drilled that, so 3 out of 4 of us ended up in full-time Christian work. Because we saw something, in a passion in my mother and dad. Now, so we saw them turn fear into faith and love, and we watched them. We do it. Now the fun thing is I watch my own children. They've struggled, but now I watch them, and they all have a cutting edge in ministry. And it's fun to watch. Now, some of them struggle more than the others, but it's just fun to watch. All right, learn to see things from God's perspective. Now, that is really, really important, because the enemy will come along and say, Al, that word you had with those guys in the office is not worth a dime. That talk you had across the fence, it's just crazy. And you're so busy, you don't have time to have people in your house. Besides, you've got Bibles all over the place. They won't like that anyway, so don't have them in your house. See, that is the humanness of us and the enemy speaking. But you, on your knees when you're praying, a method is learning to see what God is doing. See it through the eyes of God and watching the incremental movements. Now, that's harder at first, but when you've had the experiences that Becky and I have had, and I could tell you lots more of experiences where I've done some of the most unusual things, or we have, and God has just blessed it. And the key is seeing it through God's eyes and what God wants to do. Learn to take the initiative. Matthew 9:36-38, when he saw the multitudes, he had compassion on them. It says he went to all the towns and villages. Then when he saw the multitudes, he had compassion. Which came first, initiative or compassion? Initiative. You don't feel compassion until you get involved. So the first thing you learn is take the initiative. When you see something move, do it. And that is this whole idea of overcoming your fears. And if you're afraid, you have to do it. You just have to go. And I've said in navigator circles, in some cases, navigators have become so relational that they've forgotten how to share the gospel. And that's another dimension. You do have to bring the gospel up front. It's got to come sooner or later. But another thing that can happen is that, in terms of this whole issue of initiative, is that doing it right and relating just right to people can become so paralyzing that you don't ever do anything. And so one of the things that I've learned is that first lesson that I learned with Ken or with Mike and Ken is, okay, if I'm paralyzed, move. I remember telling Jim Peterson one time, I was kind of talking and I was upset about the fact that in the navigator work we're not doing enough evangelism. You know, I see too much standing around sometimes, and including my own life. And so I was telling Jim, I said, you know, Jim, over the world, if people want to get in a truck with a loudspeaker and just go around preaching Jesus, says it'll be all right with me for a little while. And Jim says, well, why? And I said, because we've got to get the initiative. Get moving. Now, that's not true. I was vastly overstating that. But my point is that even if you don't do it quite right, if you realize you're paralyzed, do something. Just go look for somebody and sit down and share with them. If it doesn't go well, don't worry about it. Because the momentum, getting over the paralysis, is absolutely essential. And you have to get over that fear. And believe me, I fear. I am so afraid. I'll sit on an airplane. I'll sit in an airplane with somebody right behind me. I don't even know them. I won't see them again. Should I talk to them? Oh, need to read a book. They're not interested. I know they're not interested. Look at them. They're reading a book, too. I'm tired. I've been traveling so much. I don't have time to get in a heavy conversation. Just tying myself in mental knots. Then pray about it. Lord, what do you want me to do? Okay, share something. Okay. Then you do it. Okay. Then live a life of love and compassion. Now, I really want to throw compassion in here because Christians can be judgmental. And people are really messy. And so I think what we have found, Becky, you were mentioning the thing on the hospital with Bahi. You want to mention that earlier?
There were a number of times that Bahi, I don't know how she even got to our house. She was so bad at beating up. And then I'd have to, late at night, make arrangements for the girl to be taken care of so I could drive her to the hospital. And I think, and I couldn't understand why she stayed with Chris, and I knew she had to. I had to wait till she got to that point and let her go through it where she could leave for her own safety as well as Regina's. So I think it's just giving people time and accepting them where they are and letting them be who they are and just keep praying and being there for them until they get to the point where they can make those good decisions that need to be made.
And you know, we had another couple that the husband was involved in seances and all kinds of stuff, and it just got worse and worse and worse, and finally they had to split up for a while. And he hadn't come to the Lord. She was a really fine woman. Well, on the one hand, we had to take a real firm stand with him, get her in the home. I don't know, how long was she with us? A couple of months?
3 months.
3 months. Get her in our home. work with her, but then go love him. And now that couple is back together again. He knows the Lord, and they're doing really well. But it was a huge battle. Huge battle. Well, now all these things, I can tell you, they cost us immensely. And frankly, Al, I think one of the methods is cost. Because it's just so costly to get involved in those lives. And they're messy. This audience that we're talking about here at this con, or talking to in this conference, see, all of you are economically pretty well off. You're doing great in parts of your life anyway. And, you know, you don't want to give that up and you don't want to risk it. So what that does is it builds certain kinds of margins that are good around your life. But we need to come outside of the box. And one of the things that Becky and I had to learn to do is navigators don't get involved in that kind of stuff usually. But this was not navigator stuff. This was just us. And that wife needed to live in our home. The kids needed to be in our house. Bahi needed our help. Those kinds of things. And so we don't have to see now, is this going to multiply? See, all we need to do is just ask this question, do they need compassion? And so oriented around love and compassion at this stage. Ministry definitely needs strategy. But at this stage of the launching pad, you're just talking about a lot of love and a lot of compassion.
Troubled by one thing you're saying.
Okay.
I believe in the compassion bit, but it seems that you talk about how it affected your family.
Yeah.
You seem to weigh your family with the other people, and your family came up on the short end of the stick.
Yeah, that's a good point.
How, I mean, are you professing that is what we should do as well?
No, I'm not, I overstated that, and I'm glad you brought that up. I would have put a gap in there, but what I'm talking about right now is in terms of the compassionate aspects of it. What I do now is, and you want to comment on this, Becky, is I'd sit down and weigh very carefully, okay, now what's going to be the impact on the family? Now, the lady living in her home, that was no problem. That worked just fine. But to have non-believers in your home over a long period of time, I wouldn't do that again. I'd do it another way. And we did pay a price that we shouldn't have paid. You bet. Go ahead, Beck.
I would say, as Alan has said, with the one gal who lived with us for 3 months, the girls look at that as a very positive time and experience because she knew the Lord and they really liked her and knew her. And she just sort of fit in with us. With the two boys, one of our oldest daughters was just staying with us while her husband was in Turkey. And she says, you know, we just didn't like to give up any time that you and Dan had. And she says, we just were very selfish in that. And she apologized for it. And I said, well, you were a kid, you know. You had to give up some of your living space. And you had to figure out how to live with boys in the house and all like that. But I think she has come back and said, well, we've learned from that, too. Now, the thing with having Chris live in our home, who we didn't know that well, who was a non-believer, we ran into some issues. And we always made sure there was someone in the house with the girls and I if Alan was ever gone. So we had put that safety factor there because we didn't know him. But I think we would have, that one, we would have done differently.
And we had a terrible problem with our third daughter. And personally, or while the kids, she would say, and the other children would say, it didn't have anything to do with these kinds of things. I have to believe some of the stress and strain that I brought in there of being overcommitted. Now, I wasn't neglecting my family at this time, but I'd say, boy, I'd sure build margins around that for sure. Absolutely. And I appreciate you bringing that up, Al, because I get it to talking evangelistically and then lose sight of it.
Priority. Well, we can't use them as an excuse. And if the word obedience comes to me,
yeah,
you have to weigh up and be obedient to what you're doing.
Well, I think one of the things that's happening a lot of times with our, I'm watching in ministry is, we really need to be family oriented, and I think there's a tremendous emphasis in the right direction on that. But I also think there's a tendency we can make our family an idol in terms of ministry. And that's something we've got to keep in mind, too. So we've got to balance it off in terms of, because, again, I'm watching Amy and John right now up at Fairchild, and they're out there doing exactly the same thing. I'm watching Chad and Sandy at Colorado State, and they're out there doing the same thing, and they've had some people come to Christ. My son-in-law and my second daughter have had more trouble personally, and they've repented and come back. So there was about a year in there where they were growing, and then they were married. That complicated things for them, but still, Nancy's downtown Chicago inner city ministry locking in. Philip's going with her into that process. You know, they're really connecting into the process. And I have to believe that a lot of it was that they caught it, that it's just part of what life is all about. And they see it part of their lifestyle. Then here's where we come. Now, what I would say is if you're working with skills, you can take these two books along with the Living Proof videos. You can sit down and work your way through either one of these, and anything that they work with. We've seen groups that we've worked with this little deal, Your Home, a Lighthouse in Teams, and they do just fine. We had buckets of people come to Christ in Canada by using this. They're doing it in Detroit. They're seeing the same thing, people coming to Christ. We're working on Jim's stuff in Detroit and Seattle, and we're already beginning to see movement of people getting into discussion groups. There are questions in the back for John, and I can get the Romans questions to you that Jim is using as well. So the methodology is real clear and easy, and getting a good, clear gospel presentation that you feel very comfortable in presenting is the thing you're going to need. And then learn to function with like-minded people. That's really important, like Dave and Val. I don't see it needs to be a team, although I think a team is best. I think teaming up can really, really make it easier because it's body life. But like-minded people, like Dave Haas, Dave and Jan Haas have moved up into the area where we are. Dave's come to work with me on a leadership project. Well, Dave and I are talking about how are we going to team up in terms of some kind of ministry to the lost. Now, it can complicate things because you end up creating activities that everybody's committed to, so it creates accountability, but sometimes it can also become very time-consuming. But I need some accountability right now because of the issues of like not getting that Christmas thing done with Dick and Priscilla. If somebody had been around to say, hey, did you do that? I would have been much further down the line with that. Well, where are we? I think I came in with this goal. I came in with the goal of the goals we listed, but a sub-priority goal of helping you to see that and get your audience out there that you're working with. Get a little list of people that you're praying for day by day. And just think about them all the time. Think about what you might do. And the other thing is don't get in a hurry. Don't get in a big hurry. And don't get discouraged. Don't despise small things. Because you can get so overwhelmed with that you can lose it. If you were on a campus, it's a temporary community. It's only 9 months. You've got to hit it. But when you're in the community, even though we live in a very mobile society, there are all kinds of things that you can do. And my neighbors have been with us for 7 years. I guess most of us have. Most of our neighbors have been around us for some time. And believe me, you want a mental structure in your mind. Leaders fly cover. Leaders create environment and space for people to do things. And you need to be around those kinds of people who will do that for you. And give you the venue to let you function in, like a little breadboard meeting for like some of the stuff you guys have. What is it? Prime time in Kansas. But that's a leader job. But your job is to go home and tell your friends what great things the Lord has done for you, and that he's had compassion on you. That's what God's called you to do. If you do that and you get around a leader or leaders who will fly cover for you, you'll see a lot of fruit. Well, let's pray, and it's time to shut it down. Father, thanks so much for the privilege of talking about these things. And Lord, thanks for wanting to bless us. But more than anything else, we know that you want these people in the kingdom far more than we do. And so, Father, we want to ask you to use us for your glory and to bless the little things that we do. In Christ's name. Amen.